The following message was recorded at the 2011 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
Well, today I've been asked to talk about protecting your kids online. And I spent, prior to being elected DA, and I've been with the DA's office for over 20 years, prior to being the elected DA, I was an assistant DA, and I spent the last 9 years or so before being elected working in sensitive crimes. And that has forced me to learn an awful lot about the internet and computers, because it is a big source of our problem. It's also a tool for us. But what I want to try to do today, first I want to dispel a few myths, because I think people have some misimpressions about what's out there and what's going on. And I think that leads parents to a false sense of security. I want to talk about the nature and the scope of the problem. I want to talk about what you can do as parents and offer some resources, and I do want to answer your questions. So if you have a burning question as we're going along, I'm happy to try to address that. Otherwise, I do plan to leave time at the end for questions too. So let's get into it. You know, the first myth I want to bust today is this myth that we'd know a sex offender if we saw one. Ever see the movie Dennis the Menace with Walter Matthau? And it's a more recent movie of it. And they have the guy who was the scientist in Back to the Future. He plays the bad guy in there. You know, he comes into town, his teeth are all rotten, his hair is scraggling, greasy, he's dressed. You know, as soon as he walks into town, the local police chief sees him and approaches him because here's a criminal. And I think there's that sense that that's what we see, and that is absolutely false. I've only had one out of many hundreds of child sex offenders I've prosecuted. I've only had one that, boy, I looked at him and, wow, he just looks the part. And the odd thing was all the neighborhood kids called him Pops, and all of his parents let their kids go into his house and get candy and soda and other things, and no one ever suspected him, even though he was the one that looked like it. So there is no typical sex offender. They come from all walks of life. I can tell you, I have prosecuted people from every school district in this county, and this is the same in any county you go to. We're no different than anyone else here. From many different churches and denominations, religious people, they come from a lot of walks of life, and there are a lot of people who use those opportunities to get access to kids, and we have to be vigilant as parents. They're from all socioeconomic groups. This is one place, like drunk driving and sex offenders, it cuts across all of the boundaries, and there is no shortage here or anywhere. When I haven't looked now for easily a year and a half. At the time I looked on the registration information, the oldest was 102, the youngest was 8, and the 8-year-old, when you get kids that young, they're really, really dangerous. So, you know, there's a myth that, you know, you look around your neighborhood, and when I say your neighborhood, I don't mean your specific neighbors. I mean the area where you live. They're everywhere, and I'm not here to freak you out today. I'm just here to make sure you got your eyes open. There are over 21,000 registered sex offenders on Wisconsin's registry. There are over 600,000 nationwide. You can look it up, and I'm going to hand you out a piece of paper if you want one, with my contact information and this website and a few other websites that might be useful to you. So you don't have to worry about jotting them down if you don't want to right now. You know, there's this other myth. We'd know if something happened to our kids. That's not always true. You know, we've seen with the priest abuse scandals, kids that never came, well, they're not kids now, people that didn't come forward for 30 or 40 years. When we pick a jury in a sex offender case, we will ask people, has anybody had an experience like this? Because it wouldn't be fair to have them sit in a jury box and listen to this kind of evidence and relive in their own hearts and minds a traumatic experience in their life. And so we'll let them tell us in a private room away from the rest of the public, well, what was the nature of your experience? And I every trial we'll have grown men in their 50s and 60s sometimes who will talk about being abused when they were a child. Well, did you ever tell anyone? No. I mean, and they're not making it up to get off jury duty. These men are weeping because they feel compelled to tell the truth as jurors that, okay, I had this experience, but they've never told anyone. And there's a lot of reasons. It's usually that it's someone close to the child that's doing it. There's embarrassment and shame associated with it. You know, and that embarrassment and shame comes from even simple things. My daughters are 7 and 9, going on 18 and 20. I'm sure you have the same kind of experiences. My 7-year-old, not so much anymore, but boy, up until about 5, that kid never liked to have clothes on. And, you know, and I'd leave for work in the morning, and I'd be getting in my truck out in the driveway, and she'd come tearing down the driveway naked. Like, get back in the house. Nobody's supposed to see you that way. Well, there's nothing wrong with saying that to her, but that in their minds that are developing, even especially when they're younger than that yet, that's starting to develop. This is a thing that's shameful. This is a thing I'm not supposed to talk about. This is private. When something comes on TV that we don't want them to see, and that happens a lot, you know, what do? You're going fumbling for the remote. You're covering their eyes when they're real little like that. When they're getting a little older, like 9, I'm kind of embarrassed that this thing's on there. Well, they pick that up from us. They're sponges. They're soaking up what our attitudes and things. So all of those things, guilt and self-blame, sometimes threats or fear, actually that's very rare. Usually the threat is more subtle, like with a girl whose father was sexually abusing her. Mom and dad were divorced. Dad told her, if you tell anybody about this, they're going to put you in a foster home. They're going to take you away from both your mom and I. And so the girl bottled it up for years. Use of drugs sometimes, that tends to be more with older women. If you've got daughters that are starting to go out to social events and things, you should teach them, don't leave your drink where you can't see it. Keep it in your hand. Don't put it down, like at a bar, for instance, because there are creeps out there, and all the date rape drugs are odorless. They're colorless, they're tasteless. You won't know you're drinking them. And what happens is the girl will be exhibiting signs of impairment. She's at a bar, so she looks drunk. Here's this nice guy helping her. He's going to get her safely home. Right. And they're not going to wait. They're not going to realize. They're not going to wake up in the morning for 12, 16 hours later. And we may never even get the evidence of the drugs. And we certainly aren't going to find the guy. And typically there won't be injuries that you observe. So, you know, will you know? You know, not necessarily. Now, I had that website for the Sex Offender Registry up there, and it's more sobering than that number, because most, we know 85 to 90% of sexual assaults go unreported. How do we know that kind of stuff? We'll give these guys, after we send them to prison, we give them a free interview. We want to know what makes them tick, and we've been doing this as a system for 10, 15 years. Tell us about other things you've done, and they talk about all these other actions they've committed, and we're pretty confident that these numbers are conservative, that 85 to 90% go unreported. And of that 10 to 15% that are reported, we get a conviction in about 61%. So all told, convicted offenses are less than 10% of all assaults. So all of those ones that are unreported, uncharged, acquitted, they live in communities all around us anonymously. So we have a very important job as parents. Now, why do we hear so much about sex offenders now? Well, I'll tell you, the justice system even when I started in the DA's office 20 years ago, it was a very different place. Now we have a justice system that listens. We have a justice system that is compassionate and understands relative to what it was 20 years ago. It's like we came out of the cave, and it is creating much more attention to it. Now, you know, there's a National Center for Missing and Exploited Children that'll come up a couple times today. It's founded by, it was organized and it came to be through the efforts of John Walsh, the guy from America's Most Wanted. It's a terrible story. His son Adam was taken and never returned. And, you know, the thing, they get a lot of attention for things like Amber Alerts and other things when there's a missing kid. Most of those Amber Alerts, the kids are taken by a family member. They're taken by divorced dad or mom. It is the fact that 57% of assaults take place in the victim's own home. 93% are committed by someone known to the victim. The other 7%, how do they come in contact with the kids? Well, it's changed over the years, and now much more frequently, it's the internet than in past years, but it's still, there are other social settings where they can have it. They've always been among us. And the world isn't that much different than when Ward and June Cleaver were parents, and maybe some of you don't even know what I'm talking about, in the 1950s, Leave It to Beaver. They wouldn't even name a show that anymore. Well, maybe on MTV, actually, they would. But on purpose. But it's really not that much different. You have this Ward and June Cleaver's, the rules that existed for parents then were to know where your kids are, who they're with, when they're coming home, what they're doing. Same rules today. It's no different. The world's not really that much more dangerous, because when you look at these things, there aren't strangers out there that are just grabbing kids every day. We don't have kids grabbed at a bus stop and all that. That's not the real danger. The real danger is to know the people that they associate with every day. I remember in Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal Lecter was saying to Clarice the detective, you know, what do we covet most, Clarice? And ultimately the answer was the things we see. He was giving her a hint that the guy that abducted this woman lived near her and could see her. That's the plain fact of the matter. So you really need to know what your kids are up to. Be involved in their lives. So if they've always been among us, why is it so much more prevalent than before? Well, a big part of it here is Pandora's box. And you know what that means? You open it up and bad things happen. Now, the internet's good for many things. Like, for instance, after today, you can go on the internet and look at all of the different presentations from this event today. It's awesome for that. And kids use it for a lot of good things. Last night, I play in a band. We had a gig last night. And as we were packing up our gear, they were playing the song Brandy. And somebody said, who did that song originally? Somebody pulled out their iPhone and looked it up. I've already forgotten it because I don't have to remember it because I could just look it up again. But it's got a lot of great uses. All right, that one is admittedly a little bit trivial, but it was useful. So there's a lot of great things for it. So I'm not here to bash the internet. It's very useful. But the stranger danger talk that parents have always been, you know, when the McGruff dog would come with the community safety officer to the school and talk to kids or talk to parents, they talk about stranger danger. Well, it's still the same thing. It's stranger danger on the internet is a little bit amped up. Because you don't really know who you're talking to on the internet, right? Sometimes you do if it's a person you know and you can tell from the context, oh yeah, this is Liz. I know that's Liz because we're talking about what we did last night or whatever. But all the rest of that stuff, you don't know who you're talking to. I like there was an old Aerosmith video that the story behind the song was somebody doing this sex number communication thing, that the dial 900 numbers or whatever, and they show the whole video. It seems like, wow, this is really great. And then at the end, they show it's this woman ironing and there's like 50 kids running around the house screaming and she's talking on the phone, you know, because it's not who you think it is. So the internet has created some exacerbation of the problem because it used to be, you know, there wasn't so much sexually charged stuff around. And now, if you're looking for that, it's there. It is just so abundant on the internet. You don't have to buy magazines. You don't have to go to the dirty bookstore. You don't have to do any of those things. Just go online, and it's free. Those internet things, they require a credit card number frequently, but usually that's just to guarantee that you're 18. That's just part of their screening. They're required to do that so that they're not, so the kids can't access. Well, that's baloney. They can access it. It's very easy. But it has exacerbated that problem because if you've got a person who's got a sick mind and you just keep dangling the thing that causes their sickness in front of them and it's so easy for them to have access to it, it's going to make the problem worse, right? It's, you know, some people that are addicted to alcohol or drugs, they've got to be very careful about what social settings they go to because they may have weaknesses. That's the same for these guys. So if they've got that weakness, this can make it a lot more difficult. And there's one thing I'm going to talk about today that I've never talked about when I've presented at this event, and that is the dangers that come from kids communicating with each other on the internet, because that's a whole new world now for us. Because take, when we were kids, most of us, there are a couple younger people in here, but most of us were kids. If you were going to get bullied at school, it was going to happen on the bus or at the table at the lunchroom or, you know, the old school bullying, like giving you a swirly in the bathroom and stuff like that. It's mean, but you can kind of chuckle about it compared to what happens now. Because now a kid can send a Twitter message, they can tweet something saying that so-and-so is a homosexual or whatever, and he'll send it to 500 other kids with the push of a button. And they do that at school. You get one, you get a kid who will be dating a girl, and in the course of their dating, she'll let him take a photograph of her in a sexually compromising position. Well, it's okay because we love each other. We're going to be together forever, right? Yeah, all these 15-year-olds. How's that going to work out? Well, they break up. What happens to that photograph? It's easy to digitally upload. Boom. And you give it to one other kid, one other friend at school, and all of a sudden the teacher sees a group of boys in the junior high. This happened at a Brookfield school. Group of kids in the corner, boys are back in the corner and they're all looking at something, giggling, and the teacher goes back to find out what are you guys up to, and they got a naked picture of another girl from the school. And we have no idea how many kids got it. They interviewed kids at the school. We're pretty confident. Minimum 400 kids got sexually compromising photographs of that girl. And it happened at that school, and it made a big media splash. And I was talking to the TV stations, and law enforcement officers were, and we were warning parents about these dangers and telling kids, hey, be careful with your privacy, because it's hard to have any privacy now. If you give that up, it's gone. And that happened at another school. And then it happened at another school. We've had it in a whole string of schools. Throughout the area, it happens all the time. And you should have that talk with your kids. Value your privacy. So that's an emerging danger. I gotta go through some of this stuff fast. And this will be online. You can go look at it if you want to go get these kind of numbers and stuff. If you want, I'm going to give you a handout. If you wanted me to, I will. I've got my email address on it. If you want me to, email me, and I'll send you this PowerPoint. You can look at it later for all these numbers. They're not that significant to go through all the details, except the awesome volume of this. 77 million kids. This is from a study that's almost 3 years old, by the way. I don't know that there's an updated one. So almost 3 years ago, 77 million teens are using the internet for an average of 5.5 hours a day. 33 million of them were in the U.S. I had the principal at Waukesha West High School was telling me, kids, if they've got their phone and they're gonna text each other in the classroom, they can stick it underneath the desk and with one thumb, they can type out whole messages. Like, you know, we learned, some of us probably learned on a typewriter. They're just learning with their thumb to type a whole message on their phone. They spend a lot of time doing it. Half of them have photos of themselves online. 61% have a personal profile online. My 9-year-old had this debate with me. She wanted a Facebook page or MySpace. I don't even know what it was. I wasn't listening that closely because the answer was no. No, you're not old enough. She trumped me because she had the ultimate trump card to play on me. She gave me the argument that, well, I bet Grandma and Grandpa let you have that kind of a page when you were my age. My wife and I laughed for a long time after that. These other pages are also from that study from almost 3 years ago. 71% of teens receive messages online from someone they've never met or don't know who they are. Somebody just fishing, looking for someone to talk to. You know, they put screens on those, you might hear that, Yahoo chat rooms. Kids can't go in those. That's baloney. They don't know who you are. All you have to do is check in. They'll ask you for I want a profile of you. Tell me your first name, your age. You know what kids do? They'll put in 130, because you can't go in there if you're under 18. So they type in 130, and the chat room will let them in, but now they're letting the other people out there know I'm really just 13. So all you have to do is lie. Yes, sir. Right.
I'm 25 online.
Right.
You know, they have their real age and their online age, you know, and it's not difficult to do that.
Right.
I hear it all the time. You
know, yeah.
Their pages, you know, but online I'm just older.
And that's
hard to tell sometimes when a preacher that they might post to me, I don't know, the way kids, you know, address and things like that, sometimes it's hard to tell if they're middle school, high school, you know.
Did the rest of you catch? He's at middle school. How many of you expected to hear that from a middle school teacher rather than, well, high school maybe, but middle school? It's a fact, Jack. Thank you. 45% say they'd been asked for personal information by people they don't know. I can't do this stuff here, but there was a law enforcement officer that was working undercover doing investigations, and he got a kid that was communicating with him, and he worked to see if he could find out who that kid was and where they lived. And he did it by working back, talking about, what do you like to do? Baseball. Will you play on a team? Yeah, we're the Sharks or whatever. And we had a big championship season this year. What state do you live in? He found her. You can do it. It's not that hard to do. You just have to be patient. These guys spend hours talking online with kids, the ones we catch. We're talking about not 2 hours. We're talking about 16, 24 hours these guys have spent logging up, talking to these kids to build them up for what's going to happen. 30% of the kids said, and these are blind studies, so nobody's going to send a note home to your parents saying you did this. It's, you know, so we hope they're going to tell us the truth. 30% said they considered meeting someone they only met online. 14% of those kids said they actually did. Okay. Why are they such good victims? Well, we're all kids once. They're naturally curious about their sexuality. They are easily manipulated by adults with bad intentions. They do need affection and attention. And as much as you may give them at home, they're seekers of attention. They will keep the secret. And many of them do. So the sex offender characteristics, 98% are male, 84% of their victims are female. That means 16% of their victims are male. Okay, so don't think just because you have boys, this isn't a problem for you. 79% of their victims are under 18. 92% are white, That's bad news for the racists out there. 86% are older than 25. 90% no prior arrests. So the police in my office never heard of him before. These people that come into my office to get charged, 90% of them, we've never heard of him before. So again, it's back to that. We'd know them when we see them. Not really. We don't know who to watch. You know, I don't want to spend time on this because I have a lot of things to get through, but here's what they do. They don't threaten kids. They don't grab kids at a bus stop. They groom kids. They begin small. They build. They put the child in a compromising position, and eventually they get the child trust, and they get the kid compromised, and they aren't going to say anything to anybody. Here's one example. We had this case in Waukesha. This guy was going to, he was volunteering at local nonprofits, and they had no way of knowing that he had any history. He did, but it was a juvenile history. They couldn't check. He had this business card. It's Josh's mentoring program. He had no education or background for it. One of the victim's moms had this card on the refrigerator with a magnet, and kids were sleeping over at this guy's house. And here was the culprit. He had this pinhole camera in a box in the shower, and he would encourage the kids, the boys, you know, you're getting older now, you're getting odors and things, you need to take a shower. You'd convince all the boys in the morning, take a shower. Why? Because he had this. Very, very creepy. And he had over a dozen victims that did this. So there was one boy that slept at this guy's house more than 40 times. Mom trusted him. So what are you going to do about it? Well, there are safety tips. There are some ideas. And that's why I'm primarily here. You know, there are simple things to do. Set the computer up in a common area. You should be able to walk up behind your kids while they're using the computer without them knowing you're there. Just walk up and what's on the screen? Because they can click it off really fast if they know you're coming. So put it in a common area. There are filters that you can get. You know, go talk to the guy at the computer store, Best Buy or whatever. There are all sorts of filters you can get that keep other things out. With your internet service provider, I believe all of them, mine has it, you can go to your internet service provider and they offer a number of different filters and things you can use. Use monitoring software. There's two examples of a Guardian and Spectre soft. Instant messaging disappears without a trace unless you do something to save it. And by the way, nobody under 25 uses emails to communicate with others socially, right? It's all instant messaging, texting, tweeting, all those things, and they all disappear into the ether. With law enforcement, we've been capturing emails for years. We can get their emails and track it back on their computers. We can't get the instant messaging unless somebody did something to purposely save it. So as a parent, think about that too. Put that kind of software on, and they don't know. They don't even know you're doing it. They don't know you're checking. Yes, sir. Yes, there are. And I would talk to your cell phone. The question was, is there something like that for cell phones? Talk to your cell phone provider or the place where you purchase it. There are things you can get through your cell phone provider to monitor those things because now they're basically computers. You know, cell phones are computers now. I don't know the answer to that. I my provider has those kind of things. My kids don't have their own cell phones yet. But you know what they still do? They get my wife's cell phone every now and then, fish it out of her purse, and I'll get a bill for $9.99 that they bought some gaming thing they could play on the phone. We didn't give them permission to do that. And I've called my cell phone provider, and they put a filter on. They can't buy those things anymore. They have that stuff available. Yes, sir?
Just about every cell phone has the ability to enter in a code before the phone will
be. Yeah. You're right. They can be password protected from opening, and I know that because the bad guys we bust often have that. My wife and I need to learn how to do that. The point of it is, don't assume that you're going to be able to know everything they're doing, because unless you take affirmative steps to do it, you can't know. You know, supervision, I've said this a few times today, you know, talk with other parents. Some schools will have a parent-to-parent directory that if your kid's hanging out with a particular kid, you can look up that kid and find out who their parent are, and they'll have contact information for them. Why would you not call the parents of the kids your children are hanging out with, just to get to know them, find out what their ground rules are and stuff that can apply to a lot of things, like alcohol? Would you, you know, if the kids hang out at your house, you wouldn't let alcohol be available to the kids, would you? And you monitor it, right? You keep an eye on the kids. You don't have to ask it that abruptly. You can be more tactful, but... And that parent might actually appreciate that you're asking the question, because they have the same concern in all likelihood. So now you got a kindred spirit, and you got a somebody helping you in your quest. Yes, sir. I don't want to rate them. The question is, more and more kids' homework, even at very young ages, it involves going on the internet. That's true for my kids too. The IXL and other things that they're doing on there to practice math and other things. The question was whether any of those particular filters are better than others, and nobody's paid me an endorsement fee, so I'm not going to make any. But you know what? Go at the computer store. Talk to the salespeople there. They can direct you to things, and then you can, you know, it's internet stuff. You can go online, and typically products like that have other people's comments about how effective they are, how useful they are. Yes, sir. Yes, and that is exactly the point. And the point was that none of the filters are perfect. They're helpful. The people that are funneling inappropriate stuff onto the internet are constantly finding ways to avoid the filters. They change the filter will keep out. They'll identify this as an inappropriate program. The filter will upload that as one of the things it keeps out, and then they change the name, and now somebody has to discover it again. That does happen. Yes, sir. Okay, the question relates to Wi-Fi and other devices throughout the house. You're going to install that through your internet provider. So it's going to filter anybody using your Wi-Fi connection. That should be the case. Yes? We have, I repeat things so that Anybody that's going to watch this online later can get it. And we had a young man in the audience who has, as many young people have, some expertise. And a lot of times we're in the office, and if some tech thing isn't working or we can't figure something out, someone will just make the comment, somebody call a fifth grader. And because they know it. My kids, 7 and 9, are much more adept with computer stuff than am I. So, but talk with other parents. Know where your kids go online, because it's not always at your house. They can log on at the library, school, internet cafes, where they go babysitting, other things. You know, ask them questions and find those things out. Just make sure they're not leading a secret life. And, you know, you really develop a trust relationship with your child. So on the one hand, I say spy on them, and then I say develop a trust relationship with them. Would you? Yeah, that's exactly the point. Trust, but verify. And you know what? If they don't like that you're checking and they challenge you on it, I'm doing this because I love you. It's a dangerous world, and I'm sorry, kiddo, but I'm going to do this to make sure you're safe. You know, with drugs, we've told parents for years at DARE programs, we tell parents, best anti-drug is a nosy parent. If your kid has sudden mood behaviors, changes, or friends that are different or something, you're suspicious of things, go search their room. Give them a hug when they get home, because you love them, but also because when you hug them when they get home, you can smell if they've been smoking or drinking. You get up close to them. Spend more time with them. You know, hopefully that's not that painful a thing to tell a parent. Why wouldn't you search their electronic stuff too? It's no different than going through their desk drawer looking for a bag of pot. Go online and see what they have. Check the internet history, see where they've been going. Now they can erase the internet history, and they can do those things unless you put these protective softwares on that can prevent them. They can think they're erasing it, but you're going to be able to look. Spend time with your child on the internet. See what skills they have. Watch how they do it. Ask them to show you how it works, especially with some of these things that younger people are doing that us dinosaurs don't do. I still make a phone call on my cell phone. I'm a dinosaur. Yes, sir.
Seminar before, it was about, you know, dealing with your teenager, and the middle school youth minister here, one thing he taught me was, you know, because I'm one of these dinosaurs a little bit, even though I sell technology for a living, is, you know, I don't want to text, I don't want to do this. But what he taught me was, you know, you've got to be able to interface with your kids. You've got to learn their world.
Yeah, well, the point is, ask them what they're doing. Ask them to show you how it works. And maybe you know how it works. Play dumb. I think they're usually pretty ready to believe that we're dumb. Well, maybe that's just me. Not so much, right? And part of that point, you've got to talk to your children. You know, who else is going to do this for you? And you've got to, there's certain ground rules. Okay, there are a lot of things that, okay, maybe you're spying on their instant messaging and stuff. You know, when I was a kid, my dad didn't want me drinking, but he said, I'll tell you one thing, we'll get everything else we can get by, but if you get in a car after you've been drinking, or you get in the car and your buddy's been drinking and now driving, you and I are going to have a big problem. There's certain things that are absolutes. An absolute, never arrange a face-to-face meeting with somebody you met online. Just, that is the biggest danger there is. You know, don't give out identifying information. Don't post pictures of yourself that anybody in the world can look at. And your child should let you know if there are things that make them uncomfortable. And you don't have to react by freaking out and taking away their internet. They're trying to share with you that something made them uncomfortable. So react appropriately. so that they'll continue to trust you that way. Yeah. Some of those web, yeah, you're right. And the concern was that there's a language, there are abbreviations and codes, if you will, that make it hard for us to follow what they're saying. And there are some simple ones, OMG and LOL. We all know what those mean, right? Okay. Those ones are simple, but it's a lot more complicated, and it's constantly changing. Some of the ones that are more popular or more widespread, some of the websites that were on this sheet I gave you, can have places where you can learn stuff like that as a parent. It's too lengthy a thing for me to try to go through right now, ones I've seen, but yeah, there are a lot of them. Yeah. You're right. I can't think of it right now, but you're right. There are those kind of things that they can alert somebody that I'm not alone. I'm being supervised right now.
POS.
Yep. Thank you. Yep. You know, a middle school teacher. So if it's too complicated for you, ask them to show you how. You know, if it's too complicated for you to understand, you might want to ask yourself, and I'm not telling you they shouldn't have these things. You just need to ask these questions. Do they need an internet-capable phone? Do they need a camera phone, texting, a social media site? Your call. You're their parents. You decide how much you can trust them and how responsible they are. But, you know, the everyone has it. Thank you. Everyone has it thing. Really? Come on. We did that to our parents when we were kids, too. It's foolishness. We said, come on, everybody has a TV with a remote control. Yeah. So what's the worst thing that could happen? It's just a phone. Well, I talked about the cyberbullying. Even just communicating, you know, with their own phone. It's a lot easier than old school bullying. It's a lot more damaging too. The compromising photographs, I mentioned that. Not just the nudity, but doing things they won't be proud of someday. You know, the Olympic swimmer, and I'm blanking his name. More recent. Michael Phelps. Thank you. Yeah, for crying out loud. The guy is, and I don't know what's happened with his endorsements and things, but that was really foolish. And everybody's got a camera now, so you balance a beer bottle on your head, and sometimes kids will actually put that as a photograph on their MySpace. Really? Employers actually check that now. They're checking that. You might not get into a school or get a scholarship because you put a stupid photograph on there. Talk to your kids. Make them aware of that. You're not impressing anybody that really is going to be that impressed with you, and you can really do yourself harm. Opportunities will close for you if you put these things out there. And once they're out there, you may not be able to reel them back in. Odds are you won't. Yes, sir.
I was going to say, it's like a missile. Once it leaves,
yeah. Yes. Right. The analogy is like a missile. Once it's launched, it's gone. You've lost it. Ask these questions. I mentioned this already, like June and Ward Cleaver. You know, will there be any grown-ups at this place? All those things. Well, those are the questions you ask them in the real world. You've got to ask the same questions in the virtual world. Where are you going? What are you doing? Who are you talking to? What are you talking about? What are you looking at? All those things about their internet activity. It's the same rules. And I'm actually going to finish on time here. These are some resources. There are more out there. You know, you can just Google search for parent internet safety tips, whatever, and you get directed to all sorts of things, these websites. These are some good ones that I'm familiar with and I know have useful stuff on them. The NetLingo, I think, addresses the one question. They have stuff on there, and they kind of update where you find those, the codes and the lingo. So otherwise, I have my email address on here, and if you want to get a copy of the PowerPoint, I'm happy to send it to you. I'm nothing confidential about any of this. And if you have questions, I'm happy to work with you. I really need parents to be my partners. I got 385,000 people in this county, and I have 17 and a half prosecutors in my office. I can't do it all. My best resource are parents who have questions and are intervening and putting up roadblocks to trouble for me. So thank you. I can't believe it.
Let's give it up for
Thank you. Finished on time.
Thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy the day. Go out this way and then go that way. Your first option will be the 10th on the left. And the first
My pleasure. Thank you.
Oops.
Let's turn this off.